Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. So welcome everyone to another episode of Brainstorm Brewery. It's episode 97. I'm Marcel, I'm here with my co-hosts, Ryan, Jason, and Corbin. You guys want to say hi to the fans?
We should say who we are, because I talk to some people in Philly and they sometimes can't tell us apart.
I'm Corbin. Hello.
I'm also Corbin.
Hello. Hey guys, I'm Corbin too, I love ice cream!
And
okay, preps!
And Taylor, you can't forget Taylor Swift.
You guys really fail on this.
I love Surge.
That one's clearly Jason. You can tell from the sarcastic tone. And I'm clearly Ryan, though I don't talk much or show up to events as much as I used to. So.
And I like Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I show up about as often as Corbin does.
You guys both failed on Philly. So Ryan just showed up like at literally the last second, and then Corbin, was spotted at GP Philly. So I text him, I'm like, hey Corbin, when are we gonna hang out? Can you get dinner after you're done here? And you're like, what are you talking about? So there were confirmed, Corbin sightings at GP Philly that turned out to be totally bogus. So if you claim you saw Corbin at GP Philly, no you did not.
I'm elusive.
And see, and that's the beauty of having people who will go to events for you is you get to stay home and clean your house, which has been much overdue through the winter. So, yeah, I decided the night before that I just wanted to stay home and get some stuff done. So, yep, that's why I went there.
So you missed an awesome party because I saw the stream. Slick Jagger, they did the stream on MTG Brainstorm's Twitch channel. Jason was there acting a fool. I seen Angelo from Pit Ants on there, Martin. You guys look like you had a wild time. JR was there. Ruben Bresser got on. It looked like the party house in Vegas. Like, Jason, you got some stories for us? Cause, it looked like we got a picture of you actually passed out with a beer in a hand and some pink bunny rabbit hat. So.
Yeah, I definitely was nodding off. We had very strong beer and I'm not much of a drinker. So it was, I'm one of those drink beer for the taste of it guys. And Slick Jagger hooked me up with a bottle of 120 minute IPA, and everybody who knows what that is can be jealous now. It was as delicious as the last time I had it, only maybe a little bit more so because he aged it for a little while. So that was a great present. Thank you, Slick Jagger, for that. Thank you for putting me up also. Being able to stay in a city for free is definitely clutch. Hotels are for losers with no friends. The party was pretty crazy. I think I showed my butt crack on camera at some point. Martin Bernay definitely played a hilarious Canadian prank that none of us had seen. He ran in the bathroom and came out with a handful of wet toilet paper and just threw it on the ceiling. And then he kind of looked at us like, huh? Huh? Like that was when we started applauding. But nobody like had even conceived of that as a prank. So we saw him do it and we were just all like, why? And he's like, well, it's hilarious. I took wet toilet paper and now it's on the ceiling. We just all looked at him like, must be a French Canadian thing. So,
I used to do that in second grade.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I remember that being a thing in like middle school.
Okay, I guess I missed that. So, yeah, classic Brunei. Nice prank, Martin.
It's actually pretty fun. Just looking at it.
I thought Angelo for the Pit Imps was gonna die at one point.
What do you mean? Oh, because I heard he drank a whole bottle of Wild Turkey in 1 hour.
Yeah, and basically, the first pack of the draft he did indicated that. Definitely, if you're trying to level up as a limited player, my advice would be not drink an entire bottle of bourbon and then try to boost your draft.
Well, what happened?
He's like, you're in red. And then he handed me like 3 red cards, 3 white cards, 3 blue cards, 3 black cards, 3 green cards. I was like, I would play Fall of the Hammer and none of these.
What do you mean he handed you? Did he tap out and then he handed you the decks?
Yeah, and I did packs 2 and 3 and they were the Theros packs, and luckily he sent such absurd signals, to Slick Jagger over on my left that, I had a pretty decent pack 2. So I managed to cobble something together, and then somebody else played it because I was busy passing out with bunny ears on. So it was just a good time. It wasn't all getting completely obliterated either. It was going to nice restaurants, not spending very much time at the site. When I was there, I was playing EDH and just meeting people and just having a great time. I spent maybe half hour selling. And I kind of got an appreciation for what it's like for somebody who doesn't sell at GPs. So this will actually segue into something our fans care about. So Slick had some Marsh Flats and Arid Mesas and Johnny's and, you know, just some goods, right? And he wanted to sell all of it. And it's been a while for me since I just kind of went, you know, okay, who's paying what? Just went up to the first dealer and be like, will you buy my cards? And they go, yeah. And then they say, we'll give you this much money. And you go, okay, great. Most people don't go around all the different tables and see who's paying the best and stuff like that. And so he watched me just, you know, spend about 20 minutes gathering intel, sit down with three different dealers, sell the stuff. And he watched me get money just by asking for it. So this is something I've picked up over the years. It used to be they're like, okay, this pile adds up to 319. I'd get a single out of my wallet and be like, can you give me, you know, just 320? But now I just say, just give me 320. And he watched three different dealers give me a dollar because I asked for it. And that just blew his mind that like, you can just ask for a dollar. So So that's a technique. Like if you're selling to a dealer and it's off by a little bit, just ask them to round it up. And most times they'll do it. So there you go. That's, you can literally get value just by asking for it. Well, and he's like, how many times have you done that over the years? And I'm like, probably 100. So that's probably just 100 free dollars just for asking for it.
What also speaks to dealers will give you a number on a card, but most of the time it's not like, oh, this is the only number that could ever be ever. Like, you don't want to sit there and argue or haggle over every card. But like, if you have a card that you know someone across the room is paying like $1.50 on, you have 10 of them, and they offer you like a dollar, most dealers will be like, hey, you know, they're paying, can you do $1.50? A lot of times they'll just say yes. Like, they're still going to make money on it. You just can't be afraid to actually talk to them.
Yeah, and they know you're paying attention too, because if they get the sense that you don't know prices or, you know, you're not paying attention, they'll start to be like, all right, well, maybe I can offer a little lower. So you definitely want to let them know that you know prices and that you're paying attention, if you do. If you don't, then, like, you don't care. Part of magic for you is just playing magic, and you don't really care about getting that extra 50 cents. But if you're there just to sell, let them know you're on the ball. If they'd be like $3.50, be like, you know what, they're paying $4 over there. Then they know that you know your stuff. You not only know what the card's worth, but you know what other people are willing to pay for it, and they're going to offer you fairer numbers.
Yep. All right, so let's talk about what people actually care about. Spoilers.
Oh, no, hold up. We got an email.
Nope. This is why you don't get to control the segues, because you're like, hey, we should read an email, and Corbin's all about it. And
he's
then
right to the climax.
You give him a little bit of power. He's like, oh, I'm the last one still talking. Well, I'm going to steer the ship and toward the iceberg. So you know what, Corbin? Let's let Marcel handle the segues from now on, okay?
I'm the only person actually going by the show notes that we all agreed to beforehand and went in order of the show notes. My bad.
We didn't even agree, man. We don't.
No one agreed to that. You just put things in a willy-nilly order. The only thing that's in order is intro and outro.
Yeah, we were just too lazy to actually change it around. It was already there when we got there.
Just so we know where the blame lies.
I'm you, because you created the show notes, as always. Although I was proud of you, got them in here on time this time.
Exactly. He did do
it.
He was
still the last person on the podcast, though, just for the record.
Yeah, he changed the 96 to a 97 almost immediately. It was quality work.
Well, I very much appreciate the compliments.
Hey, you're a stellar gentleman, Corbin. Your work ethic is just beyond.
Read an email.
Are we allowed? I thought we had to do spoilers. That's what it says in the show notes. We have to go by the show notes.
Read an email.
Can we got permission? Thank you. To hold or fold.
Marcel, are you sure you want to read this email?
Oh, why wouldn't I?
Okay, it's fine.
Yeah, you had enough. Actually, have Ryan. He doesn't get enough airtime.
That's by design. Huh? He's probably muted.
Ryan, read his email.
No, I'm muted, but hold on.
He definitely doesn't have it in front of him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That is probably definitely true.
So let the short bus Chad read the email, please.
Shut up, Corbin. So we're finally going to do this thing. We keep talking about reading emails on the air, and it's finally time to do one. We have one this week from Alec Barrett, and it says, to hold or to fold is the subject. It says, hey guys, really enjoy the show, even if I'm not really part of the speculator crowd. However, this part is relevant. I've played for a couple of years and had a pretty reasonable collection, but my opportunities for playing Magic have been increasingly limited outside of MTGO. So I've been strongly considering getting ahead of the curve on selling off everything that's going to drop once Standard rotates. A lot of it is pretty obvious. However, I also have some other cards that still have legs in other formats like Modern. Thoughtseize, Mutavault, Chandra, a bunch of Shocklands, Swords, various Planeswalkers, Judge Foil Path, etc. The question is, how much am I really getting for sitting on them for a while as an investment versus selling completely out? I'm not selling because I need the money. I'm just trying to maximize value. Any advice would be great. Thanks. And I guess I'll start right off. I really think what you have to do is you have to look at how much growth these kind of cards have. And you can kind of see, like, what's the reasonable price for any mythic over the past year. Like, things like Geist of St. Traft, Liliana. Like, how much for playability and Legacy and Modern do they have versus what it was just coming from Standard? And I think, though Mutavault does see a lot of Eternal play, I don't think it's something that's really going to just spike immediately out of Standard. So a lot of those cards are fine to sell now, especially if you can turn them into cards that are going to be spiking or even going to be dropping after rotation, and then you can get into them cheap at that point. But I think, like, the Shocklands are a fine thing to hold on to now. I wouldn't get rid of those because I don't think they have any room to move down, and I think, honestly, they're going to see probably potentially 100% jump for some of them over the course of the next year.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. Mutavault, I think we all agree, is really high because of its ubiquitous it is in Standard. I think that'll drop the Thoughtseize and the Swords and the Shocks and the foil path. I think I know the one he's talking about. I don't think it was a Judge promo. It was just it's like a WPN promo or something. Anyways, I think you definitely hold on to those. Like, and you say various Planeswalkers. Now, I don't know if you're talking about something like, like Domri or something like that, that, sees Standard play and has its price buoyed by that. If you're just talking like, you know, Chandra Firebrand, Stormmark.
You mentioned Chandra elsewhere, so I'm going to go with probably not.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he may be talking about like the new one.
Chase, Architect of That.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Roserick.
Like Roserick, I think you just hold on to. But the Planeswalkers that have price that are higher because they actually see Standard play, you're probably fine getting rid of those. But basically stuff that doesn't see Standard play, like Ryan said, you just hold on to it because, it goes up. And you know what? If you sell all your Shocklands and get $6 a piece for them, you're gonna go have dinner. And you know, it's not like that money's going to appreciate any. And if you don't need the money, why not just keep them in your Shocklands? That way if you come back, 5 years, whatever, and want to play Modern, oh, you're set. And by the way, they may be worth 3 times what they were before.
Yeah, I don't really advocate selling lands ever, even if they're, like, super Standard specific. Like, there was never a good point, except, like, 2 months away from rotation, to sell stuff like Sulphur Falls and stuff like that. So, since there was never really a super good time to sell those, people mostly just held on to them and, you know, they're a couple bucks now, but they're never getting reprinted, probably. So
Sulphur Falls is expensive, actually.
Yeah, well, but yeah. I meant that cycle. Like, right. some of them are like a couple of bucks.
Sulphur Falls is $50. So I think
$50?
$7.50. Like, I think it shows your point.
I know. I didn't really think it was $50. Sorry. Exactly. So the people that sold Sulphur Falls at rotation got like $2, and the people that sold before rotation got like $5. So you might as well just hang on. Like, the time to sell lands is never, pretty much.
Well, what about Mutavault? Do you think Mutavault's going to come down before it goes back up?
Yeah, it's going to come down because it's definitely Standard. Yeah, Standard is the reason that is so high right now. It's played as a four of, and most of every Standard deck is played throughout Standard. And it was a factor in Merfolk and Modern, but it's not really as big of a factor. I don't see the price being as high as it is once it's in Modern. It should come down.
Okay, so if you really want to maximize, you sell now, buy it rotation, and keep it, or sell when it goes back up later. But if you're not looking to do any of that, and you just, like, the curve, there would be a straight line you could draw from its price now to its price later, and you could either, you know, make some money selling in that interim, or the price will just be, you know, a straight line across, and you won't lose anything by keeping the stuff. So if you're not really interested in selling now and buying later and then selling again or keeping, you're not going to lose any money hanging on to the stuff. So if that's really what you're worried about, like, not being able to get max value later, like, I think Mutavault will come back up. And I think a lot of lands do that. So if you're interested in selling now, now's the time to sell if you want to maximize getting out, or you're going to have to hang on to them for quite a while.
And one thing, Thought Seize is I don't think you should sell. Like, we had this, problem with like Liliana last time, and then Karn as well, Batterskull, Grizzlebrand. A lot of these cards that you thought were going to drop come rotation, and they were internal playable. They just rose come in rotation. So the buy-in period was like about a month and a half, maybe 2 months before rotation, and that was like the lowest price that you could get in, get out. So if you hold it, you might want to hold on to something like Thought Seize, but the other cards should all go down.
I think people kind of misinterpret, you know, the rotation drop that people talk about. You know, you talk about someone like Grizzlebrand, which was never a thing in standard, like for the most part. You know, it was never expensive because it was a standard card. So, you know, the rotation drop on it, it went from about $14 to about $12 in the 2 months before rotation, which is nothing. And now Grizzlebrand is, you know, $30. So I think if a card's price is not determined by standard, then don't let standard be the reason that you are selling a card. So like Grizzlebrand was not how much it was because of standard, it was how much it was because of the format. So standard rotation didn't affect it. All that it meant was, hey, now it's 2 years older or a year and a half older or whatever, and there's fewer of them out there. And I think that's the same thing that's going to apply when we start talking about Return to Ravnica rotating. Is that the stuff that's worth money, because of formats that are not standard, don't let standard rotation be your reason for selling those. So it also doesn't mean you can't always pick them up cheaper, like Shocklands. Yeah, they're played in standard, but they're also, you know, obviously everywhere else. I don't think that they're coming down a lot at standard rotation, so don't think that you're going to get them cheap at rotation, because it could be the kind of thing where they dip a dollar and you think they're going to go lower, and then the next thing you know, they shoot up $10 like Snapcaster Mage did. Snapcaster Mage never really got cheap. It just stayed the same price and then got expensive. It never dipped like people would expect.
That was such a great email. Let's move on to spoilers.
What just happened there, Marcel? You did a bad segue and then you did a good one later. What's going on?
That's not a good word. That's even worse. I go to the Tarb School of Segways. If you ever listen to MTG Potpourri, Tom Gustin from Monday Night Magic, he has the worst segues ever, and I went to this school early on. So I strive to do worse.
Great. I'll start us off with a spoiler that I'm kind of excited.
Why do you get to start us off?
Because I'm talking and I have one pulled up. And it is Nyx Fleece Ram. Uncommon.
No. Come on.
Yes. One colorless, one white, 05. At the beginning of your upkeep, you gain one life. Do you guys think that this is going to be standard playable?
Yes.
Sideboard, maybe.
It's good against mono
sideboard,
red.
Definitely. Okay. Fine. Sideboard, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, against mono red, this just shuts them down because they're more creature based now. So now they can attack through this and you gain lives incrementally.
Yeah.
Toughness is huge on a two mana creature. That seems like rather a lot.
Yeah. Like, and not even the red deck's obviously the first thing you think of, but even there's the mono green aggro deck that's kind of a thing. Black red aggro is kind of a thing. Mono blue devotion, this is actually probably pretty acceptable against them. I mean, you don't block all their creatures, but you certainly block some of them and you gain life.
Which ones do you block?
Stinkcore Weird, all the way, fully pumped. Yeah.
You block Stinkcore Weird, you block, Tidebinder. You know, I don't, depending on the matchup and where you have your ram, you know, you might not be facing Tidebinder with it or not. Master Wave tokens, although, you know, that's less relevant, but still, like, you'd certainly block some things out of their deck and you can gain life incrementally. I don't know if you want it there, but it's certainly not the worst. And that's like, you know, that's even kind of that spectrum, like the stuff against the red decks or the black red aggro decks. It's actually just insane.
I don't think this card has any financial relevance, guys. Like, before we spend too much time talking about it, like.
Just as an uncommon, the relevance is this. Don't ignore it at your pre-release. If you can trade for them, for very cheap, and by that I mean people will basically throw them in because it's an uncommon, go for it, because, it's probably gonna be relevant the first couple weeks.
Alright, starting off the card
you like. I'm
pulling
up the price data on, Fanatic of Xenagos, okay? So let's look at that. Fanatic of Xenagos is like 50 cents right now, and it started at like a dollar, and it's trended slightly down. I think Fanatic of Xenagos is probably just as good as this card. Probably gets played just as often. And that was something that went nowhere. So how is, you'd have to get this for less than nothing.
Fanatic of Xenagos goes up to nothing. Fanatic of Xenagos is actually like not even played. Just
I don't think this is going to get played either. Or maybe like just as much. I don't know.
Let's just move on.
That's probably a bad example. That was something I pulled out of my butt off the top of my head. Like, what's an uncommon from
the
last set?
How about you just talk about cards you like? Why won't you quit beating up the card and go to something else?
Yeah, what do you want to talk about?
Because I think people need to know what's going to happen price-wise with this if we're going to talk about it.
Jason, no, no, I understand what he's saying. Why are we talking about it if there's not a financial relevance to it? Besides the fact that I just like it. I just think it's something you can probably scoop up as a free throw and in a trade on pre-release day, rather than having to pay $2 for them the first
two. What
are
you going to get for it?
Yeah.
Give a freaking a bulk, something's going to be a bulk rare from this.
Well, what are you going to get for it? Like, why pick it up? This doesn't seem like, when Boros Charm was pre-selling for 50 cents, that was a snap. Like, I don't think this is Boros Charm. That's all I'm saying.
No. I think people may want to play with it and not have to pay $2 for it. But yeah, let's just move on to a different card. Who's got one they want to talk about?
Aegis of the Gods. Holy crap. You have Hexproof. 2/1, 2 mana. A colorless and a white. He's a human soldier. I don't know if it's, human or soldier tribal affiliation will be relevant, but there's non-trivial numbers of stuff that pumps that. He's a 2/1, you have Hexproof. I think he's probably overpriced right now, but I also think that he is something that people are very excited about.
So what does he do for us? Like, what is there in Standard really that's really big right now that targets a player that could play this card?
Thoughtseize.
Yeah, Thoughtseize is very nice. Rakdos Return.
I was thinking about that, but like, you don't play Rakdos Return against the decks that are going to play 2/1 bear.
Yeah.
Like,
you just wait for them to overextend and then.
Yeah, you just play Rakdos Return against the control decks when I don't think the control decks are playing this card. So. Is there a modern application to it where people go into your face is more of a
Storm?
Yeah, but it, like, doesn't Storm just use the first copy to kill your guy and then shoot
True.
You? Does it not
True.
Work that way?
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, I think everyone sees cards like this and they're like, oh, Death and Taxes and Legacy Hate Bears and stuff like that. I'm like, well, if every 2-drop that everyone said was going to be sick, you know, was in Death and Taxes would be able to win with Battle of Wits. So, this is just something that a lot of people are excited about, and I think it's worth taking a look at, but I also think its hype has generated a higher than normal pre-sale price. If you look at Spirit of the Labyrinth, which is like, what's that right now? A couple bucks? Down from 7? When we were like, hey, you know, the whole Voice of Resurgence effect could make this maintain its $7 value, and then we were just
totally
not correct. I said could, so I could weasel out of it if I was wrong.
Yeah, I think you were the person pushing that theory.
Well, people were as excited about that as they are about this, so I think this is probably, I don't know, it's worth paying attention to what players are excited about, but at the same time, I think this probably can't maintain its value better than Spirit of the Labyrinth did, which was not.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's, even if people are excited about cards, you gotta rein in your excitement sometimes.
I like the Eidolon of Rhetoric, which is a Storm Hate card.
Yeah.
This is the 2-colorless, 1-white for a 1/4 enchantment spirit creature. Each player can't cast more than one spell each turn.
So I think this might replace Aethersworn Canonist because it can't be bolted out.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yep. And people already played like Rule of Law. Doesn't die to Lightning Bolt. I think it's a pretty huge deal.
But it does die to Flame Slash, which people are starting to play, and it dies to all the same enchantment removal they got. You've got Rule of Law.
Yeah, so. I mean, that's true. It's actually, no matter how you put it, even though it doesn't get bolted or whatever, it is still more fragile than Rule of Law. So maybe, like, the decks that played Canonist, it will replace, but it won't replace Rule of Law. I think that's probably it.
I think it's 4 toughness is relevant, and it's too bad it's an uncommon, because I don't think there's any money to be made here.
Yeah.
Because if it's a sideboard card, great. We got an enchantment that's going to be like a 2-of-in-1 deck sideboard.
Right.
So let's talk about this rare or mythic that I think ain't going to be worth nothing.
Okay.
Prophetic Flamespeaker?
The worst fears. Flamespeaker, oh yeah, the Flamespeaker, it's not going to be
good. It's the Mindslaver?
Let's talk about worst fears for like 30 seconds.
It's a Mindslaver.
Yeah, Mindslaver that you can not re-loop again and again and again and again and take over the game. It's not a Mindslaver in the era where the mana burn doesn't hurt you anymore.
It's not a Mindslaver. It's a Mindslaver. It's not Bulk.
You couldn't Manaburn people with Mindslaver. It specifically makes a reference to Manaburn on the card Mindslaver. Like, that's why people actually like the old Mindslaver, because it said Manaburn on it.
I didn't know that.
That's because you weren't playing then.
Well, I have actually an original one in my deck. But no, I actually disagree with you, Marcel. I think it will be worth something because Commander play wants Mindslavers. Like, who cares that it costs 8 mana and you can't recur it? It's still a Mindslaver. And it's a mythic from a third set that's going to be open for about a month before we start drafting Conspiracy.
So how long is it going to take to become not Bulk? I mean, like, it's going to start off, or is it?
It's probably going to, like, dive down to near Bulk, and then after, you know, but as soon as we stop drafting this, I think in a year, it's, like, probably, you know, a couple bucks, and then 2 years from now, it's one of those that's randomly $5 or $6, because it's a mythic.
I can see that. That's fair. We'll pick them up when they go down. You know, don't get them now. Don't pre-sale. And this card's not going to do anything as standard.
It's sad that Marcel says, let's talk about the mythic that I don't think is very good, and, like, we all had a different guess. That says a lot about what they spoiled out of the set so far. So what I alluded to before was Prophetic Flamespeaker, which I don't know what card to compare it to historically. I saw this and I saw Warren Instigator. Now, people were excited about Warren Instigator. That was a 2 red mana, 1/1 double strike goblin. Yeah. And whenever you hit them, you put a goblin into play. So I'm looking at Prophetic Flamespeaker, and he's got 3 toughness, which is good because, you know, he doesn't have 1 toughness like Warren Instigator, but... So there's a trade-off. Warren Instigator was narrow in that it only got goblins, but Prophetic Flamespeaker is random in that you don't control what's on top of your library. So, all in all, everybody sees they're like, why is a 1 toughness or 1 power guy with trample relevant? And then the first thing everybody thinks is, oh my god, madcap skills. So do we think Prophetic Flamespeaker with madcap skills on it, which is pretty much the best thing anybody's mentioned, is that going to be a thing in standard?
No.
I think if you got a control deck and you're able to control the board and you got this down there, this is card advantage in a creature. This is like, you know, if you're able to protect this, you got a, like a is it type of deck, because there's going to be some is it control decks. I don't know. I could see this potentially being a piece that if you're able to protect this, clear out the board, bounce creatures and get in, you have the potential of getting 2 cards per turn.
But that reduces your upside, doesn't it? If you've, yes. Like your top card is Counterflux or something like that.
Not to mention if you have to spend mana on your turn to make sure he hits and you don't have mana to cast the spells that you're revealing.
True.
I basically had the same thought as Chase, and I thought of Warren Instigator, and then I looked at this and said it's the same thing. It's not going to go anywhere. It's a cool design that's... Not
and it's not play it without paying its mana cost either. It's like you can play you have access to an extra card 1 time.
That said, Warren Instigator is $8, but I think that has more to do with the being from Zendikar. And
a mythic and a goblin, yeah.
I think it's the goblin thing. I mean, cause this is a mythic too, but I think, yeah, the fact that it's goblin tribal is, what drives that $8 price.
So Ryan, what are you looking at?
I mean, honestly, I don't really understand why everybody's hating on this set. Like, I've seen tons of cards. Like, I can't even just pick one out in particular, but I've seen a lot of cards that aren't really, like, breaking out new archetypes for themselves. I think I'm seeing a lot of cards that I'm looking forward to dropping in price, like the Black-Green God. Like, I expect that to hit Karametra's bulk price, hopefully. And then I will snag every copy of that. Most people are hating on that card, but I really think if there's a Reanimator shell next year, that card's going to see play in it as a good way to just have an early game, a couple of blockers that you can make off of your extra mana elves that hit the grave, and way in the late game to potentially just have that extra guy on board to be able to, you know, push through once you've reanimated a couple of guys. Because we see kind of every other year you have those reanimator strategies that kind of crop up. So look for that one to hit nearly bulk. Let's see, as far as other cards go, I mean, the Black-White God is obviously insane. I think that, I mean, that leads into my pick of the week for this week, but we'll get to that later. And... So as far as rares, I mean, the City of Brass has some ways to go down, but I think that card will immediately have enough legacy and vintage people interested in it that I don't think it's going to drop immediately, and look for those foils to stay expensive.
Okay, so Farika is $10 right now, Ryan. You say you think it will drop before going back up, or what?
Absolutely, yeah. That's the black-green one, right, Farika?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that card is, I think it's going to be Karametra. Everyone's hating on that card because everybody's excuse I've heard saying is, oh man, if you could exile it from their graveyard and get the creature, this card would be amazing. No, it wouldn't. Scavenging Ooze is still better for that most, for the most part. That's not why you're playing this card. You're playing this card because it triggers Constellation potentially, and if there's any sort of Constellation that's good with it, that's amazing. But on top of that, you get a 1-1 Death Touch guy. That just ensures that every time you mill for a turn, as long as you leave 2 mana up, you have a blocker that's more than likely killing whatever they're attacking with. It sets you so far ahead against any sort of mid-range deck as that reanimator strategy, because you can get this online the same turn that they start swinging with these undercosted 5/5s like Pelucranos and stuff like that.
Yeah, I wish Doomwake Giant were cheaper mana-wise. Because everybody's like, oh, Edelina Blossoms, you know, that's your consolation card. I think if Doomwake Giant had a smaller casting cost, he would be probably the best consolation card in the set. Because if you're triggering off like Heliod and Farika and stuff like that, you could potentially, you know, just wrath their whole board. As it is, Doomwake Giant is going to be a little too mana intensive to do anything more than like an Infest. So that kind of sucks, but.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure none of those consolation cards are going anywhere in the like Constellation deck.
Well, Farika, Conley Woods was advocating Farika's in the Dredge deck and the Jund Dredge deck. So he says this card will fit in and it's going to be a player in that deck. So
I think Farika,
that's fine too. That's pretty sweet if Artie's going to see play. I mean,
I don't
want to
buy in at 10.
No,
not even close. No. I think the card still, honestly, even if it does see some play, is not going to go anywhere over 5. It's not like a Pharah where there's, you know, multiple decks trying to jam it and stuff like that, and that card's still at like 7. It's small set, late. I mean, if for some reason it spikes an SCG right off the bat, maybe it has a chance to go up, but it's very unlikely.
Well, the first Pro Tour, the next Pro Tour coming up, I believe, is Block, right? So we'll get a chance to show off all of these cards.
Well, and not only that, but I mean, as always, every year, and we'll talk more about this as we come closer to the Pro Tour, but you kind of keep an eye out for the cards that, you know, have a lot more potential next year than they do this year. And that's where you start to see those cards like Farika potentially shine, because, you know, maybe there is some sort of beginning reanimator strategy that's there and it's just too slow for standard. But like, I very much like that. I know it costs 7, but if you're playing a mid-range deck, that 5 or the 7 cost reanimator spell that makes it indestructible, the card definitely can do work.
So let's talk about the card that, you know, you mentioned the Black Green Dredge deck earlier, and the City of Brass, Mana Confluence. That's the new City of Brass, and it's a little different than City of Brass in that City of Brass, you take damage just from your land being tapped, no matter how that happens, whereas this one, you only take damage, or in this case, pay 1 life, if you activate the ability. So, like, I've actually tapped the City of Brasses with Mirror Reagery triggers before no damage, and this doesn't do that. So I think they're not the same card exactly, but functionally, 98% of the time they're the same. And Mana Confluence opens up a lot of things in standard, like that green-black dredge deck where people talked about all it needs is better lands, and it's really powerful. Well, now we have it. Mana Confluence is $20. What do you guys think of it at that price?
Do we want to pay? I think Temple of Malady is going to help that dredge deck more than Mana Confluence. I don't think you want to play 4 of them. I don't think you necessarily need a City of Brass in a 2-color deck. I would like to see Mana Confluence open up 3 and 4 color decks, but Mana Confluence just seems like such a non-bo when the first 2 sets in this block rewarded you for playing Monocolor Devotion.
Well, like, what this is going to do is, this is what is needed for the aggro, 2-color aggro decks to even be viable in this format. So I think this is actually going to help any multicolored decks break in and have a chance against any monocolored decks. Yeah, even though I think it's a hard and slippery slope because those decks are already so good and they're just going to become more tuned after this set is released.
What it helps is like, you know, I actually disagree about the black-green deck not needing this, because that deck needs to cast Mana Dwarfs on turn 1 and then double black spells on turn 2 or 3 or whatever. And that's really difficult, especially if, you know, your new green black land is a tap land. You know, it certainly helps and it's great, but like, yeah, that deck gets a lot of value out of Mana Confluence. And so does like the black red aggro deck, where you, the same thing, you want to be tapping out early, but you need the tap lands for mana fixing. Or, you know, if you're playing that deck, well, now you don't have to play you probably still play the tap lands, but you know, you're not as hurt by them. Because you have this kind of helping you out and smoothing out your draws. So I think it will do quite a bit to help the aggro strategies, as well as, you know, maybe some of the mid-range strategies. And it's the first time I think we've had something like this in standard for a while, right?
Yeah, this is, it was in 10th edition, I believe. It was relatively recent. City of Brass.
It was probably the closest we got.
It was 9th edition was the last time it was printed, unless I'm incorrect. Definitely wasn't in 10th.
Okay.
Reflecting Pool and,
we have the internet.
Probably the last,
8th edition.
Was the last City of Brass.
Okay, so it was, yeah. Even farther before 10.
Incorrect. Modern Masters.
Shut up.
Oh, good one.
That's not in standard.
Yeah, but still.
You just said City of Brass reprint.
I was saying I said it's a long time since we've had this in standard.
Yeah, he did say standard.
Oh, sure.
Brian was not listening to you.
No, we weren't either.
Anyway, so, yeah, it's definitely going to shake up standard.
What's underrated right now? What card that has been spoiled is underrated? I'm looking, I don't see anything, cause I really like Battlefield Thaumaturge. Like, that's insane in Animar. That's insane with stuff like Comet Storm and, you know, Fireball and stuff like that in EDH. So everyone's talking about building around Battlefield Thaumaturge. I'm like, this is probably like a $2 rare. I look and like, it's a $16 playset on eBay right now. Like, $4 for this? As much as I like it, a one of format's not gonna drive it up so much that a $4 buy-in is good, so. There's like nothing underrated as far as I can tell so far. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's overrated or that's properly rated and its price is huge because presale prices are huge because a lot of work goes into that and people take risks buying all that product to sell the singles. So there's nothing I see. Like when a Thragtusk was like $5 or something like that there's some stuff that it's obviously too cheap on the presale, and I don't see anything like that. I see a lot of stuff that's about the price it could be or more than the price it should be. I don't see anything underrated.
Yeah. I mean, I think I probably agree.
And I think that's the best advice we could give people.
I agree. Like, everything in this set's overpriced. I looked at the cards that were spoiled, like, yesterday, but everything beyond that.
Right, I got one to throw at you then, guys. What about Master of the Feast? It's a 5/5 flyer for 3. One colorless, 2 black. Flying enchantment creature. At the beginning of your upkeep, each opponent draws a card. It's $3 to $4 right now.
Probably still overpriced.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the card a lot, but it's, I don't know. Like, we'd have to see a lot of play out of that card. And is there already the biggest problem is there already a deck shell that it just instantly fits into that you're going to see a wide enough spread in that first weekend to make it go up?
Here's what I think,
you have to create a new deck around it. Because if something you have to create a new deck around it, most of the pros and stuff, they're going to be testing for the Pro Tour. The guys who are innovating aren't going to be there in the limelight for these first couple weeks as far as like new decks go.
Okay, well, I'll tell you this. The black-based aggro decks have been doing extremely well in block. And like, keep in mind that it doesn't matter if it's not good in standard, because Wolfear Silverheart wasn't good in standard, and that card went crazy at a block tour.
After the Pro Tour, but I mean, speculating on that is just like, you have to know block itself to talk about that. And I mean, I play as a little bit of block, but I haven't been playing really since Born of the Gods, so even I don't want to speak on that. When I find out more coming closer to the Pro Tour, that'll be a time to talk about that stuff, but I don't want to speculate on a format I don't even know right now.
I think you would need to build around this guy's drawback, because I don't think the fact that he has got a good casting cost to power and toughness ratio is enough, because if you look at something like Dusk Mantle Seer and everyone's like, oh, symmetrical card advantage, that's pretty good. So, you know, he's just going to be beater and like they can take some extra damage. Dusk Mantle Seer was a card that everybody wanted to jam with and just never did anything. This isn't even symmetrical. This is asymmetrical card advantage. They're going to get such a huge advantage out of that. Like, I think you want to play this in Nekusar when you're punishing them for that extra draw, or you want to shut that extra draw off and then you've got a beater. But even then, I don't think it's that good. Like, I think you have to build around his drawback and have that be the focal point of the deck. I think just jamming him as a poor man's desecration demon in a deck is probably not going to get there. You probably want to spend that 3 mana on a Herald of Torment.
I disagree, actually. I think that if you don't want to build around his drawback, I think that's a mistake, actually, because then you're building around a card just to get a 5/5 flyer, which seems stupid.
I'm not saying that good. I'm saying that's less bad.
Well, I mean, I honestly think, like, if you have a card, if you have a deck that's fast enough, them drawing additional cards doesn't matter exactly. If you kill them.
And the block decks, the black aggro decks are very good in block already.
Yeah, so if you go fast, yeah, I think mono black aggro is where it's at, but that's the only deck where this card will fit in. I don't think there's any other deck, so you have such a narrow focus that this card is probably at the most a 3 or 4 hour card.
I mean, so. I think that's true. I think the only thing that's possible is that it shows up and it pulls the Wolf for Silverheart where it, cause that was one deck too at the Pro Tour where the card does very well at the Pro Tour and, shoots up in price that weekend. But like, I agree. Once you kind of get out of that scope, it becomes less impressive, but I could certainly see this being one of the cards that spikes out of the Pro Tour.
But I mean, honestly, we're not equipped to really call cards that are going to spike at a block Pro Tour. Like, you know, our knowledge of the game and, you know, what cards are good, unless you got an insight on a team, you're not going to probably know about the Wolfear Silverheart. Us just looking at it, we're like, this is horrible and standard because Doomblade. And so that card was never on our radar. So like, you know, it takes a certain person to have that knowledge of block, good enough knowledge of block to, you know, speculate on these cards. So I think most people shouldn't worry about trying to speculate for block. I mean, it's potential, but you could just end up with a lot of cards that go absolutely nowhere and then have no long-term value at all in standard. So I don't.
And here's another thing. Like, since Wolfear Silverheart happened, I think pre-sale prices have been higher on average just to account for that kind of thing happening. So I would compare this more to something like Sire of Insanity, which actually did see play. People were on Sire. It was like a $4 pre-order, right? Then it was seeing play in the Jund deck, and like people thought Sire was good. People were jamming with it almost immediately, and it never really went anywhere except down. It never went up for $3-4. So like this would Master of the Feast would have to get played like more than a two of in more than one deck, and I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't think I believe in it enough to go out and spend $3 or $4 on the pre-order.
Okay.
I do like this card. That's a super Timmy Johnny card, the Bearer of the Heavens. I think there might be a deck in standard that can make this. It'll be like a tier 2.5, tier 3, but it can happen. Destroy everything. Oh, this is a 7 red for a 10/10 creature giant. When Bear of the Heavens dies, destroy all permanents at the beginning of the next end step. And then if you have Rescue from the Underworld, you can bring back your creature and him, sacrifice him, and then come back and just malice their face.
So. Yeah, that sounds like a woo brew waiting to happen. Like you're the only one with the permanent and it's a 10/10, that seems pretty good.
That's a 2-card combo right there. Well, 3-card, you need a card in the graveyard. But that's not hard to do. I think this is possible. I'm gonna try to make it happen. I mean, it's cool enough to make it work.
You gotta summon this guy first, right?
Yeah, he's gotta be, or you can bring him back. He has some reanimation strategy.
Well, you're already relying on having stuff in your rescue, if you're playing a reanimator type deck, that your Rescue from the Underworld is less dependent on being in the combo. Like, you get value with other stuff too, so that's, maybe you wanna play this in some sort of reanimator. Yeah, that can be fun. Yeah.
It's the only fun I'll have in standards playing.
Well, you can play combos. It as like a one of in like the green black dredge deck.
Oh, that's true.
Like you just have it as a miser's one of, and sometimes you randomly throw that in the yard, and you're like, oh well, I guess this is happening.
But there you go. I like the card. I think this is of those type of cards, those type of world crushing effects. This is one of the cooler ones, and I think just the art looks good. Just the whole concept of the card is awesome. You know, this is Atlas. You can see from the mythology. But a 10/10, like this is something a lot of casual players are going to see and just want. So I think this has a high casual appeal long term.
EDH too, like people are going to want to build around this guy. Or do, like, anything that, what did Corbin call it? Suspicious tech? Anything that does something stupid like this, like some EDH brew is going to figure out a way to do this in casual. So the fact that competitive players are talking about it, even as a joke, like I think you're Travis Wu type people. Are going to do something with us if something's doable. So there's so much potential here, and like it's probably not going to be that expensive.
Oh, we got the new refresh. We got the new cards, the Fonts of Vigor. These are enchantments that you sacrifice. They sit on the board. They all cost 1 and a color. There's a
now,
cycle.
Fauna Fertility is just 1 green.
Oh, it's just 1 green. I didn't see that. Oh, it's covered. Okay, so these are basically kind of like seals, but seals that you have to pay a cost to pop them. The white one is 2 and a white, then you get 7 life, which that sucks. Blue is 1 and a blue, you draw 2 cards, which is okay. Fauna Return, return 3 creatures from your graveyard to your hand for 3 and a black, which is,
yeah.
Fauna of the Ire, deals 5 damage to target player, which is dumb. So but yeah, maybe fertility is the only one. So you get a basic card.
These are kind of like the spell bombs in or the capsules in Shard's block. Like these are gonna trigger your constellation and stuff like that. They'll count towards devotion, blah blah blah. They'll do stuff just sitting there, you know. They'll add to your enchantment count, and then you pop them when you need them. These seem okay. Like Fauna Fortunes is probably fine in limited. I bet LSV has a huge erection just knowing this card exists, because he used to first pick Courier's Capsule.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I think Fauna Fortunes is probably a fine, like, 6th or 7th pick in draft. Fauna Fertility's fine too. Fauna Vire, I don't know, like, do you hate a Lava Axe that will give you a constellation trigger and count towards enchantments and blah, blah, blah? Like, maybe there's a reason to play a font and we haven't seen yet. And,
I see Fauna Fertility in standard. If Eidolon of the Blossoms becomes a standard, this will be part of that deck.
Will it?
Just Mono Bloom. Redundancy, you have this and Mono Bloom. I mean, the Eidolon of Blossom is a 4 casting cost card. You want it ramped into that as much as possible. So you do this, you just avoid all Mono Dorks and you just use those as your accelerators. I think there's potential.
I think I want to trigger Eidolon of Blossoms with Boonsader. I think that's what you want to be doing. You want to be playing cards that are good without Eidolon of Blossoms and are better with it. Like, I don't know if Mana Bloom and Font of Fertility are good without Eidolon of Blossoms.
So I'm saying, people just try so hard to just make a linear deck because they see a linear mechanic. And it's just like, if there are enough cards that are powerful enough on their own to work with that mechanic, that's when it becomes a deck. Like, you're working too hard for your triggers by playing like Mana Bloom. And I mean, Fauna Fertility is actually probably not horrible. It's okay. But, like you said, Boonsider is where you want to be. But yeah, these are pretty cool. They're definitely cool for limited.
I do like Doom Lake Giant, and I think even though you're saying it's not good enough, I think there's legs for that card. The ability to wipe the board, you know, on your opponents, and it's for, you get a 4/6 for 5. That's decent stats.
He's busted and limited. He's so good.
Oh yeah,
so
limited.
So good and limited.
I think
yeah,
he has,
so,
I don't
so
think
he
he's
can,
in,
he's got
in
potential, maybe.
Maybe in standard. He has, if there is a deck that can play Constellation, I think he will be part of that. You know, if Constellation is a mechanic that people are going to build around and there's some kind of deck there, he has to be in there along with the Eidolon of Blossoms.
Because I was just thinking, oh, with Farika, like, if you make 3 dudes with Farika, you get 3 Death Touchers and they get their board wiped, that seems quite good to me. I wish he were cheaper to get out, but maybe the format will slow down. Once we lose all the RTR, like, really good stuff, once they lose, Cloudfin Raptor and Pack Rats and that kind of crap from the unfair linear aggro decks, maybe the format will slow down enough that Doomwake Giant, like, is at the top of your curve, and then you start just farting out, triggers.
I don't know. It's a pretty slow format right now. Pack Rat's not playing aggro decks. He's playing control decks. Like, it's a pretty, I don't know if this format can get much slower.
Mono Black Devotion's not a control deck.
Yes, it is.
It's a Jund deck. Like, it's Mono Black Jund is what it is.
It's full of card advantage and removal. That is
it's Jund.
Yeah, like, it is a control deck.
No, because it's got so many, a control deck wouldn't have 16 creatures.
Oh my god, semantics.
Deck plays out like a control deck. It's not a fast format, which is the crux of the argument.
What did you got, Mono Blue Devotion?
Yeah, Mono Blue Devotion is a, I'm not saying they're not aggro decks, but like you're talking about the format slowing down. The 2 best decks are control decks. Mono Black and Esper.
Gotcha.
It's hard to get much slower.
Well, I want to see a card that I know is just not going to make it is the King Makar, the Gold Curse.
Yeah.
He's 2/2 black for, 2/3 legendary human. He has inspired. Whenever he becomes untapped, he basically does a guild. I think this is very powerful. Potential, but yeah, I just don't know if there's any chance for this to become any good because Inspire is just so hard to trigger.
I would really like that guy a lot if he, like, I like the Inspired guy that costs 3. And I think, like, 3 is that magic number where you're like, okay, I could still put things in the deck to kind of, like, play around and abuse that Inspire, but not to have to devote your entire deck to, like, playing that strategy. And I feel like if you're playing this guy, because he costs 4, right?
Yeah.
Or is he 5?
He costs 4.
4. Yeah, so I mean, like, that's that point when you're kind of like, that's your mid-game strategy is whatever that, you know, that set of creatures is. So like, if you're playing this, you're clearly not playing like a bunch of board wrath because you have all this targeted removal. So like your entire deck shapes around that. And it's really whether or not there's a strategy there to like be able to keep the board clear long enough to either be able to tap him down and get the use out of him each time, or else to be able to allow him to attack each turn. And if you're going to do that, then you obviously need like a good suite of removal behind it. And I don't know. I don't know if that deck is better than, you know, these mid-range decks that get to run things like Herald of Torment or Mono Blue or, you know, just like all these other decks. I don't know if it's fast enough to beat those being a four drop.
Yeah. I completely agree. I don't see it. This is a cool card. It's cool to see that guild is going around. So there may be more use for the gold tokens. Hopefully, maybe in the next set, there may be more of a gold theme. Maybe. I doubt it. But, what about for Legacy, the Eidolon of the Great Reveal? This is the two red for a 2/2 enchantment creature spirit. Whenever a player casts a spell of a converted mana cost of 3 or less, Eidolon of the Great Reveal deals 2 damage to that player.
Modern
or Legacy?
No, because they already had the harder to deal with Pyrostatic Pillar. Nobody's running that.
Okay.
But I could see this in Modern, though.
Yeah, because Pyrocytic Pillar is not legal in Modern, right?
It is not. No, it was printed in Scourge.
Yeah. This is good against Storm. It's not bad.
Yeah, it just shuts down. Yeah, it kind of really shuts down Storm.
Basically, it's like I see it as like a sideboard option for the mono red deck against Storm. Because they basically just, you might as well have something that helps. And it could probably do, 6-8 points of damage, which may be the difference between them killing you or not. So,
Would you play this in a Zoomir?
No.
Fuck no. Yeah, that'll punish them for playing the lightning bolt they used to kill your Eidolon.
Also it's a 2/2 for 2. They could just like play a 3/3 for 1 and who gives a shit about your Eidolon, but yeah, I think it's basically just a Storm Hate card and the double red, makes it probably only fit in mono red. It seems like a solid sideboard option for them to turn a I don't know how that matchup is in the first place, but it seems like this would add some percentage points to their sideboarded games.
So it's quite a bit of Storm Hate in this set. It's interesting.
That's true. That's true. Although, it's really just, rehashes of Storm Hate. This is on a card that already exists. It introduces in the Modern. The Rule of Law enchantment creature, that exists in multiple forms in Modern already. Not sure how much is really being added.
There are a lot of reprints. Twin Flame is just Heat Shimmer. Unless I don't remember what Heat Shimmer did.
Did that only make one copy?
Yeah, and this is called Twin Flame, so they're like, yeah, you could pay more for Strive, but we don't expect anybody to.
Yeah.
It's called Twin Flame, just to make one.
Who gets also, it? Heat Shimmer could copy anything. This only copies your creatures, right? Nobody knows.
Oh, they got some multicolored cards on the bottom.
Yeah, Storm Flame only works on stuff you control. But anyway, so the set, ooh, I think is still pretty fun. I don't think there's going to be quite as much hate as there was with Born of the Gods.
Look at Disciple of Deceit. That's actually a pretty sweet card right there. On the bottom, this is a blue and a black for a 1/3 human rogue inspired. Whenever it becomes untapped, you discard a non-land card. If you do, search your library for a card with the same converted mana cost as that card.
Oh, yeah,
I saw it. To put it to your hand.
It's like a weird blue-black birthing pod that's impossible to activate.
It is a difficult to activate to me, that is true. It's kind of cool, though.
It's like a pain in the ass. It's like a slightly better effect than Painseer. And
you're never going to get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All these inspired cards, they did not learn from the last set that they just didn't do shit. And now, there's going to probably be
something. It was really too late. they had already conceived of and printed this card by the time everyone went, eh.
I mean, I think to be honest, inspired, taking a step back for a moment, it's just kind of it just feels like such a throwaway mechanic in this set to me. I don't know, like you said, there's not the most exciting card they could have possibly made was like a Bob with it, and that didn't really do anything. And, I don't know. It just feels like a mechanic that the set didn't need and doesn't really excite very many people.
Well, if they could have given us more enablers, they're like, Springleaf Drum and swinging your 2/2 into their 3/5.
Yeah, like it's just, I mean, they just, I feel like the set would have been fine without it, and they maybe it would have been better in a set where they could have actually given us ways to use it. I don't know. So the whole, it just, you kind of forget it's there because it just doesn't do anything. Like, it's pretty, like, legitimate for limited, but, like, that's pretty much it.
There were just a million keywords in this block, and we didn't ask for a million keywords. Like, they're like, oh, we've only done 7 keywords. How are we going to come up with 11 more? It's just like, maybe you don't.
If you give
us gods and heroic and monstrosity, and we'll be good with it.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I figured I'd be the only person who felt this way. But yeah, I feel the exact same. Like, I feel like this set had enough going on in it already that why waste card? Like, you just didn't need to do this.
Yeah, interesting.
Heroic, monstrosity, gods. And now if you want to throw in consolation, that would have been more than enough to carry the block.
I think Strive is going to work very good with heroic.
Oh, and Strive is cool. Like, but why do we need Inspired if there's Strive as well? Like, there's just so many.
Well, yeah, Inspired should have, like, done a segment that would have been different than heroic and should have complemented something else in the block. There's no other complement abilities.
Dude, they could have put Strive in the place of Inspired and Born of the Gods and then introduced Constellation in this set and everyone would have been happy.
It was just
too much.
Even though then Born of the Gods, Theros draft would have been more faster than it already is. Ugh, that'd have been insane.
Alright, well, let's transition into pick of the week then right before we call it a night.
Sounds good.
So let's move to pick of the week.
Pick of the week. Time for the pick of the week.
I just literally did that. What are you doing, Marcel?
What do you mean? You did, you said ignore
my segue. You pretended my segue never happened?
It did it.
What is this shit?
Did you
not? You're the only one that's allowed to have a segue. You jealous bitch. I'm the only one that, you're the only one that gets a segue? You literally just like retconned my segue. What are you, Stalin?
Now Corbin's upset.
Every time we say the word segue, he gets physically ill.
I want to hear Ryan's pick of the week.
You want to hear my pick of the week?
Yeah, Ryan.
Well, considering that outside of, you know, checking the spoilers once, you know, twice every couple hours, I haven't really been doing a whole lot of Magic this week. I did skip the GP, like I mentioned, stay home and do a bunch of housework. And that is, in fact, going to be my pick of the week this week. Clean your house, because not only will you find a ton of cool Magic cards if you're anyone like me, you'll also find a ton of cool other things you had when you were a kid, like my old Zelda games that now are actually worth quite a bit of money. I found a couple of $100 just in video games from when I was a kid, and some old D&D metal action model, like action figures or whatever you call them. I don't know, sculpts. But some of these are like $30, $40 a piece on eBay and stuff like this. I mean, if you are anything like me and you've just collected things throughout the years like most people have, old toys, stuff like that, you'd be amazed how much value is there. And it's not just Magic cards. I mean, there's a collectibles market out there for everything. And even if you don't know a lot about it, eBay is your friend and the internet can find you anything.
Yeah, it's actually the whole like vintage or retro video gaming thing is like a really huge deal. And the price on some of those old video games is pretty nuts. So,
it shouldn't be. Like, okay, why is Final Fantasy VII like $100? Not even sealed, just like the old game is like $100. And I'm like, that's on PlayStation Network as a download.
Well, like,
what blows my mind. So people aren't buying it to play with. So it's purely collectability. Yeah.
Well, it's just, it's like, it's kind of like the same as Magic in that when video gaming, console gaming really hit like its golden age in, you know, the late 80s and 90s, like all those people are now adults with disposable income and they want to have that stuff. It's like there was a post on Reddit the other day showed an NES, an original NES next to a Wii, and the Wii was selling for like $10 cheaper because like it's the NES is collectible. Everyone has fond memories of that, you know? Like, it's just that generation of people growing up and having money to spend on stuff, just like the first generation of Magic players has grown up and pushed old cards to be very expensive.
That is until they had to start blowing into their Nintendo cartridges again and, you know, realizing that the string or the lock won't hold and they got to use another cartridge to hold the lock down.
I don't know. Yeah. I have an N64, a PlayStation 3, and a Wii, and I play that N64 more than I play any of the others.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying emulation. When you go to NES and you go to SNES, emulation is just the way to go. But anything beyond that, I think, like a N64, I would totally just keep playing it. Because the controller, you can't replicate that controller.
This is why you don't let Ryan go first on Pick of the Week. I don't know why you asked for this. You literally request Ryan to derail the podcast.
There's supposed to be a story about a spider.
Huh?
He doesn't remember that.
There was the hidden spider in one of my boxes. One of the listeners out there will find it funny. Screw you, Corbin.
I was legitimately going to give you a chance. I wanted to give you a chance to tell your story. You had a fun story you were excited about. I wanted to set you up.
You know, it sounds so much worse. To me, it was entertaining. Screw you.
That's why I was trying to
say the story. Yeah, I want to hear it.
Story's terrible. It's been
you're gonna put him on the spot. Like, you are not set up for success at all.
There's no way that the story can be good because it wasn't good to start with.
Stop the bickering.
Yeah, I found a hidden spider from Urza's or whatever inside of a box.
Spiders,
and that was the only random magic card in that box. For some reason, I thought that was entertaining. Thank you for ruining it.
Might have been if you told the story in a fun way.
Mommy and
Next.
Daddy, stop fighting, please.
Next. Pick of the week time. No more derail.
My pick of the week is everyone on Moto, start picking out cards for vintage. I mean, you should have done so a long time ago, and I should have told you back around in January, but if you haven't by now, start getting them, getting your factories, possibly Mana Drains. Don't get, stupid cards like Wasteland, which are probably going to be reprinted and already out of ridiculous. But go around and look up vintage decks, go down the list and start buying these random cards that are just going to shoot up. You're going to have like Strip Mine has been going up. Various cards like that.
You mentioned Factory. Do you mean Workshop? Is that the vintage card?
Oh, Workshop. Sorry.
Factory is pretty playable in vintage though.
It's still playable. But, yeah, a lot of these cards, people have been picking up and the cards have been slowly going up. But if you want to play in Vintage Masters, which will be dropping in June, and we'll be getting spoilers from that pretty soon, you're going to see stuff go out of, pretty crazy. Demand's going to make Vintage. People want to play Vintage again. It's going to be the only play. You know, people get their hands on, Power 9 in their hand, they're going to want to play Vintage. And that's basically that's what's going to happen. And demand's going to pick up a lot of these cards. So find a couple decks that you want to play, buy your cards for these decks, and get them now before they go crazy.
Okay. I've got one. I think this could be the next random $10 modern card. Achroma Angel of Fury. So this is, I'm not going to like say this is good, but Achroma Angel of Fury is like the crazy planar chaos Achroma. That is red, has a million abilities, but the relevant one is morph. So people have been playing it as a morph target that you then use Flicker Wisp on to flicker out, and you have an Achroma. It's awesome. And it has flying trample protection from white and blue. So that's a thing. So that alone I don't think would make it a great pick. But the fact that, you know, it is a legendary angel named Achroma actually is pretty good. Just as a casual spec. So it's climbed from 3 to 4 in about the past 2 months, and it's the next card. There's still a decent amount of them online. Certainly not sold out, but it is the kind of card that if this deck wins a PTQ or top 8's a PTQ on Moto, all of a sudden it's a $10 card. So I think it's a good spec to get in on, because like I said, it's a legendary angel. The downside is extremely limited. Even if it goes nowhere in Modern, it's not going to be less than the $4 it is now. So pretty safe pickup there that could pay off pretty big.
My pick of the week has probably already gone up by Friday. If this isn't $15, just go buy them. Gave Guru of Spores. So Corbin last week said, hey, Damia's probably the next shoe to drop. And sure as shit, Damia's like 10, 12, 15 bucks right now. Gave has not gone up yet. Everything from Commander is getting corrected. I don't think it's buyouts. I think it's just price correction. Gave is very suspiciously still like 250. As of Tuesday.
And so, it's been trending up.
Yeah, it's been trending up by 50 cents over 2 months. I haven't seen a spike. This is a,
exactly.
This is trending up. Like it's a good general. Like here's the thing. I think the stuff that is a marquee general from those sets, your Riku, your Damia, your Gave, you know, all that stuff, I don't think that'll get reprinted. In even though they're going to do a Commander every year, people are not going to buy a Commander set that doesn't have new generals. So And people were like, well, what if it's just in the deck, but they have new generals, but it's just in the deck? Then you've got four legendary creatures, because they're probably going to do three commanders that you could potentially swap between, which is kind of what they do. So I don't think they would have only two new commanders in a deck or whatever. Because there was the one that had, the red, green, blue one had Riku and it had, Animar, but then it had whatever dragon from the plane chase block or, planar chaos block or plane shift or plane, whatever, invasion block.
Yeah.
I don't remember those. And then people were kind of upset about that. So I kind of think they'll do three new generals for the most part. So I really don't see these getting reprinted. They could. And especially with them doing Commander every year, they're not going to want to come up with 15 new generals every 12 months. But I think they're safe from reprint from now. And buying Gave at $3 and selling it for, $9 buy list next week seems fine. So that's my pick. I really think it's got a 100% chance of going up.
Yeah, I'm with you. Mimeoplasm, another great target from there. Riku, probably good as well. Like all these cards, the supply on them from this Commander set that's, now the original one's somewhat low. Just going to continue cracking up. Now, I do have a question, Jason. You said did they actually say they're doing it every year or just that they're going to be doing them?
Every year. That was the announcement I read.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah, because you're not a very good EDH player. No, I don't know. Like, that was something I wouldn't have known if the EDH subreddit hadn't told me. So that was news to me as well.
Interesting.
Well, that's good. Aggressive with reprints, hopefully. Keep them coming.
Well, and occasionally it'll give us a gem that like gets legacy played too. Like, I don't know. I think that's good because every time that comes out, like commander decks don't tear their decks apart. They just build new ones. So if you give people sweet new generals, they'll build new decks. So that it's just they're printing money and they're giving us money. Let's be honest. Like the stuff is going to be real cheap when it's everywhere. And like how cheap is even on this stuff? How cheap is Primal Vigor right now? My God, Primal Vigor should be more money.
Is like, that there's, the green one?
Yeah, it's the doubling like, season.
Stuff.
It's not quite a doubling season, but it's not.
Oh, that card. Yeah, yeah. I was thinking of Bane of Progress.
Bane of Progress is too cheap also. Like all that stuff, like it's just going to be everywhere. And then I love when competitive players buy them and then they don't care about anything else. The fact that I'm getting $2 Nekusars is retarded right now. So I'm all about them printing a commander thing every year. And I think they want to come up with enough original ideas that they're probably not going to. There's only a finite number of three-color combinations, though. So they'll have to come back to some stuff. But, I mean, for now, I don't think you're thinking 3 years on Gave. I think you're thinking 3 months.
Yeah.
So this is definitely just a super easy quick-turn flip. And probably get out of your Soul Rings and Command Towers, because those are going nowhere but down.
Yep, they are going to be printed quite a bit. Now, the question is, if we're on that subject, they've done Swiftfoot Boots in the last one. Do we think Lightning Greaves is steadily climbing to the point that I'd almost consider it a good pickup. But if they're printing those every year, it's a pretty high risk of reprint for Lightning.
There's a million Lightning Greaves. They're in like dual price, decks.
The price is steadily climbing even still right now. Like I said, it's surprised me too because you just think it's been reprinting a million times. But it does, I would say it's climbing, but it does seem like something they could just reprint. If they're doing this every year, makes it scary to eat into.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
All right, do we have anything else we want to talk about? We got off on our commander tangent there because we know Jason's pretty into it, and I've actually been playing way more in the past few months. So
he remembers his general's name now.
Sure. People have actually been requesting more legacy talk, so you guys get to get back into that.
Okay. I can't play legacy every Saturday like I can commander though.
We don't do requests.
Except for the one you have right now, and it's that we end the show. We can fulfill that one.
All right, yeah, let's get the hell out of here.
What Ryan said before he, like, just signed off of Skype.
Well, everyone at home, thank you for listening. I hope you guys are excited about journeying to Nyx, because I'm looking forward to the pre-release.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.